D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you at Bridgestone Arena, where the Nashville Predators will host the Edmonton Oilers tonight at 7 o'clock. And joining us, as he does every Thursday at 1 o'clock, the one and only Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet, NHL Insider, 32 Thoughts Podcast. And Elliot, the Predators will be seeking their first win of the season tonight against the Oilers. But before we get to the Predators, I want to ask you about the other team in the NHL that has yet to win a game, surprisingly. The Colorado Avalanche lost 5-3 to Boston last night to drop to 0-4 on the season. Yep. Alexander Georgiev has allowed 17 goals in four games, a goals against average of 5.79, and a save percentage of 800. Is it time to really panic about the goaltending in Colorado, and what can the Avalanche possibly do to shore up that position?
Let's see, Adam. Do we want to go with really panic, mildly panic? Like, what level of a panic scale? Like, it's not good. Like, I mean, at the beginning of every year, there's always somebody who really struggles. Like, there's somebody who gets off to a blistering start, and there's always somebody who struggles, right? And it's a good player, too. And you wait, okay, how long are we going to take to get out of this? Now, Georgiev, like, I watched that game last night. It's not only that he's getting beaten, because he is, but they are bleeding chances. Like, there were times in that game where it looked like the momentum was going back to Colorado, and Boston would just grab it back, or they'd score. And that's the amazing thing about all of this to me, is that not only is Georgiev not been good, they've been really leaky. Now, I think they could, I'm sure they're looking. I have no doubt they're looking. But I'm looking around, and I'm saying, okay, who's available here? Who's available there? I don't know how, like, I wondered about a guy like Mackenzie Blackwood in San Jose. But other than that, like, there aren't too many guys you look at, Adam, at this point in the season, and you see, oh, you know, here's a team that's willing to move off a goaltender. Because, A, a lot of the goaltenders are locked in, and B, you know, a lot of these teams, they're obviously still in it. It's very early, and they don't necessarily want to throw up the white flag so quickly.
Back to the Predators, Elliot. Tonight they face the Edmonton Oilers, and the second line will look different once again. The expectation is that Steven Stamkos will work on the left wing with Tommy Novak at center and Luke Evangelista on the right wing. So that's four different second lines to start each game for the Predators this season. We talked a lot about the importance of Novak in particular, shoring up that second line center position, but I'm wondering if, I mean, again, as you said, it's early. The Predators haven't won a game, but there's still a long way to go. I am also, though, wondering if Barry Trotz is going to be keeping his eye on potential players who could be second-line fits for this team, considering that Andrew Burnett has not been able to find a combination on that second line that works.
Boy, you might as well be asking, you know, Barry to find like a chest full of gold bars, because that's about the same as finding a second line center. Like, there's a reason why top center is one of the hardest positions to find in the NHL. And it's because, like, once you have one of those guys, you do not want to give them up. This is probably a source of frustration for the Predators, like, they clearly were hoping that this wouldn't take as long. You know, one of the things is, and I probably should have been more aware of this at the start of the season, you can go back through history and you can find a lot of guys who signed a big deal or moved somewhere, and their first year is a big drop-off. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen with Stamkos or Marchessault or anyone like that, but, you know, Stamkos had a real chemistry in Tampa. He, especially on the power play, he knew what they were going to do. He knew all those guys' tendencies. He was very comfortable. And now he's got to get, and plus some of those guys are some of the best players in the league. And I think he's probably going through an adjustment process right now. they're going through an adjustment process with him, and obviously trying to find the right combination. But like, it's got to be a huge change from what Stamkos is used to, obviously off the ice, but also on it. And, you know, you guys are going through that right now. You know, I think, you know, obviously this is a big time for Novak. They're asking a lot of him, but, you know, from you're hoping that he could rise up to the challenge. I think this is a really big period for him, because the Predators are going to find out, like, he's always been a good offensive player, and he's kind of been moving up. But now they're asking him to show that he is that kind of a player. And you can't just do it in one or two games. I mean, if you keep losing, which I don't think you will, but if you keep losing, then, you know, you probably get forced into something or pushed into something faster than you want to. But in an ideal world, you know, you probably have to give him half a season. You know, you probably have to say, you know, 40 games, we're sticking with it. That's what you'd like to do in a perfect world, and say, we're really going to give you runway to prove what you can do. But if the losing continues, you lose patience for that. But this is Novak's time to show that he's got that ceiling. The Predators are asking him to do it, and he has to show it.
We're talking with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. Now, Elliot, I've looked at some of the scores throughout the NHL the first five or six games. And, you know, we have some scores that, you know, whether it be last night, Pittsburgh beats Buffalo 6-5, Toronto beats L.A. 6-3, 6-2. The Preds give up seven goals last game.
Don't forget that epic game between Ottawa and Los Angeles. 8-7.
So you see a lot of scoring early on in this league. And when I look at other sports, football in particular, because I know that sport in and out, a lot of it has to do with guys not playing in the preseason, wanting to hold guys back, and then once they finally get in there during the regular season, that chemistry has to be built. Is that the same thing here in hockey that we're seeing, where these guys are not playing, you know, in the preseason? They don't have a lot of time together in the offseason, and this is what it ends up being, high-scoring games, at least early on in the season.
Yeah, I think there's something to that, Derek. This is not unusual to see that. I think there's a couple other things at play too, Derek. Like, I think for a long time, the goalies were ahead of the scorers in this league, and now I think that's balanced out. For example, you know, there used to be like 20 true stud goalies in the NHL. Now there's much less than that. You guys have got one, but there are many fewer than that. And that's one of the things I think has really changed, is that there aren't as many stud A-level goalies as there used to be. The other thing, Derek, I think, is that in about the last 15 to 20 years, a lot of these young players started working with skills coaches, and they became better shooters at a younger age. Like, goaltending got to a point where it was about stick the biggest guy in the net and play the percentages to cover the most space you can cover. And the areas you give up were like tiny areas, like above the shoulder or in between, like maybe an arm in the post or something like that, like places that not everybody could hit. Now everybody can hit those. Like, you see these goals that these kids are scoring now, they're scoring from ridiculous angles. They're putting them in tight, tight areas. The quality of the shooters is the best it's ever have been, and probably by about a mile. And so I think it's, and also too, we have a league now where, you know, people always want there to be less interference. There's probably less interference than ever. Like, you know, Derek, it's like when they told Lester Hayes, you can't go up to your shoulders and stick them anymore. Like, you know, you can't, or they told Mike Haynes, he can't hold guys and tackle them anymore before the ball gets there. That is between the quality of the shooters and they try to take down the interference. I think it's finally tilted the game more towards offense.
Talking to Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts, Hockey Night in Canada. Elliot, you got me thinking when Adam was asking you about going out and trying to find some help somewhere down the road. One thing that's tied to it, of course, is the Ryan Johansson grievance. Any sense of the timing of that or when that will be hashed out? Because obviously the Predators would love to have it sooner than later.
You know, it's funny you asked me that because, you know, I knew I was coming on here today. And I said, what are the chances that someone asked me about this? So I actually did homework, which
we are
is
well
not
prepared
like
on this program, Elliot.
Yeah. So basically there's two types of grievances, Willie. One is called an expedited grievance. And the other is, I don't know. It's like, I don't know if you call it unexpedited or non-expedited or dis-expedited, but basically an expedited grievance. An expedited grievance is a fast one where people say we need a ruling quickly. This is not that. This is not an expedited grievance from what I understand. So it's going to be some time before we know.
So does that mean like you need to get like your buddies, you know, to put some print like lobbyists or goons,
exactly,
whatever you want to call them, like knocking on the door. Hey, I want you to expedite this. So this is my friend Luca Brasi from The Godfather.
Goons are not, my goons are not interested in this one. We're not going to lock up anybody for this one.
Well, Elliot, I do have a quick follow up to that because last season Corey Perry went through this process. Would that have been considered an expedited one or an unexpedited one?
That one was expedited quickly because if I remember correctly, Adam, it was because I think it also had something to do. I don't have this right in front of me, but it also like he was never like banned or punished or anything like that. But I think everybody just needed clarity. Oh, you know what? Actually, you know what? I have to. Because he was never punished or like a formally banned, he did meet with the commissioner, but he was never formally. I think it was only for the salary. The salary was the only thing that was grieved, not his status. So I'd have to check and see. It's a good question. I'd have to look back because he was never formally punished or anything like that. So it wasn't like he had to reinstate himself. The only argument was about what happened to the rest of his salary. And I don't remember if that one was expedited or not. I have to check.
Elliot, the Edmonton comes in tonight. We remember their struggles early in the year last year.
Yeah.
They had to make a coaching change. They got their first win on Tuesday. If you had to point to one thing that's been off with them so far this year, what would you put your finger to?
Well, number one, before they won that game against Philly, I think they were shooting something like 3%, and that never happens. I think, if I remember correctly, I looked this up the other day, the lowest shooting percentage in a season is 7%. So they were on like a historic low bender, even though it was in the first week. So that was one thing, Willie. I would say also they've lost some speed. They look slow. And I never thought I would say that about a team with McDavid. But between McLeod, who got traded to Buffalo, and Holloway and Broberg, who went in the offer sheets, they just, it's not, speed is not only skates, but how quickly you move the puck. You know, puck travels faster than humans, so you've got to move that thing fast, too. They weren't doing any of that quickly. They were shooting at a historic low, and they didn't look quick. Their defensive pairs, they're really searching for a second pair that works behind your old buddy Ekholm and Bouchard, who's their number one pair. So I know you told me one thing, but I was never good at following instructions. That was the kind of thing I would tell you.
Hmm. It sounds eerily similar to some of the things that Andrew Brunette's talking about. He said exactly what you said. We look a little slow, and it's because of the connectivity. It has nothing to do with playing hard or trying to skate as fast as you can skate. But the connection is there, and I would say the Predators couldn't be too far behind the Oilers right now with shooting percentage because they are getting tons of shots. They're just not going in. So it will be interesting to see which team can figure it out a little bit more tonight.
Well, I think the other thing too, Willie, is like the other night when your game against Seattle, was it? It was 3-3 after two, and I went to go watch like another game, and I don't remember which one I was watching, but all of a sudden I looked at your score, and it was like 7-3. I was like, what on earth happened? And I went back and looked at it. Like, you guys looked really leaky. Like, it was like there were some real breakdowns there. You know, I tend not to think there's too much change in structure. Like, every coach has tweaks and every team has tweaks. They do a structure. But generally, like, a lot of the systems are similar, right? And maybe it was just one of those nights where a bunch of new players had a rough night mixed in with the old guys. But it was weird watching you guys in the third period the other night. It was like nobody was on the same page. That was very strange.
We had a big signing earlier today with Jake Ottinger. And
yep.
The more we watch this, our discussion on the show as Ottinger now is signed, Linus Ullmark, even a guy like Joey DeCord, is it looks more and more, and you've pointed this out a bunch of times. You said it at the time. UC Saros said, look, I know I could probably get more. I could play this out, but I want to be here. I want to get this done. But the goalie market, the Predators have to kind of like that contract, I think, more and more as time goes forward, because we still are waiting for the big one, and that is Shesterkin, which obviously will get done at some point, and he's going to set a new bar.
Yes, and, you know, one of the things that really helped, like I heard later that, like, Boston really, like, wanted to do, like, something similar with Swayman as the Saros number, but, you know, Tennessee is a tax-free state and Massachusetts isn't. So that, I think, was one of the factors in there, I heard later. You know, I think you guys got Saros on a great deal. I know it hasn't looked pretty for everyone at the beginning of this year, but I think it's a great deal. And the other thing, Willie, is we went through a phase where goalies weren't getting paid. I don't know if it's just because Bobrovsky won the Stanley Cup a few months ago, but goalies are getting paid again. And it'll be, and I think it's because if you really, like we talked earlier when Derek asked, there are fewer A-level guys. And I think teams recognize that if you have one, you have to keep them.
It's funny because the previous year when the Vegas Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup with Aiden Hill in goal,
yep.
If I recall correctly, wasn't even dressed for their first game of the postseason. That then changed the perception to, hey, you don't need to pay $10 million a season for a goalie as long as you can find one who can get hot at the right time. But to your point,
well,
Elliot,
if you look back at them, like before Bobrovsky last year, it was Aiden Hill, was Kemper. Now Vasilevsky's a bit of a different animal. Jordan Binnington had the hottest run at the right time. Like there was a phase there. Like Corey Crawford won a couple Stanley Cups for Chicago.
Braden Holtby.
Braden Holtby. Holtby was a really good goalie, but you remember the Penguins went through Fleury and Murray, and your philosophy to me is dependent on how good is your guy. If you have access to one of those top level guys, you're keeping them. If you don't, it's better to say, okay, we're not going to spend as much money here, and we're going to figure out the rest of our lineup. And it's worked for some teams.
By the way, Edmonton shooting 4.7% at 5-on-5. Nashville shooting 4.6% at 5-on-5. Two of the lowest.
There's going to be no red light burns tonight. Is that what you're telling us, Adam?
Actually, I expect another 8-7 thriller around here.
Oh,
while we're speaking about tonight, real quick, Elliot, tonight Luke Shen plays in his 1,000th game. He's got his whole family here. He's got a lot of people who are coming in because they play tonight. And then they play Saturday where they'll actually have the ceremony because he will play in game 1,000 tonight. So it's like a weekend thing. So the Shens have invaded here. But just a pro in every sense of the way. But I know you've gone way back with him. You've known him for a long time. But you always have to tip your hat to a guy that's been around the league that much and has done what he's done.
Well, I think this. I think that, you know, it's not as hard on the body to play 1,000 games as it used to be because the game has changed so much. It's still a tough game, particularly in the playoffs, but I think there's more times in the regular season where it's less punishing. That said, what I think is one of the things that becomes a factor now, especially if you're a defenseman, to play 1,000 games in this league, you have to be valuable, and B, you really have to turn yourself into either a great skater or a really positionally sound defenseman. Like a guy like Roman Josi, he's going to play as long as he wants to because he's such a brilliant skater and he's so good at what he does. Like A guy like Luke Shen was a very high pick, and he's a really good player, but he kind of bounced around a little bit, and he had to fight and scramble and scratch his way to 1,000. Like there were times that people thought, you know, his career was done. I remember he went on waivers a few years ago, and I reached out to him, and he said, there are people out there saying I'm going to retire. I want you to tell everybody I am not retiring. They are going to have to drag me out of here. I am not giving up. And you know what? That's got to be, we were at our old offices, I think, when that happened. So that's got to be 5-6 years ago. And so just think about how many guys, and Derek, you could probably answer this as well as anyone, how many guys are like in that phase and last 5 or 6 more years? Not many. And I think that's real credit to his love of the game and his drive.
Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet, NHL Insider, 32 Thoughts Podcast, Hockey Night in Canada. What does this guy not do? Elliot, thank you so much for joining us. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, Elliot. 615-737-1025. We will discuss the Predators matchup against the Edmonton Oilers. Easy for me to say. Next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game. D-Maze, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, live from Bridgestone Arena, where the Predators will take on the Edmonton Oilers tonight at 7 o'clock, looking for their first win of the season. The Predators have had a hard time, to say the least, against the Edmonton Oilers in recent seasons. They are 4-10-1 in their past 15 games against the Oilers. They have been outscored 61-37. In those 15 games. Leon Draisaitl in those 15 games. 23 goals, 37 points in 15 games. That's about 2.5 points per game. Connor McDavid, a modest 33 points in 14 games. 8 goals, 25 assists in 14 games against the Predators over that span. So it's tough sledding for the Predators tonight against the Oilers. There was a time, Willie, as you know, where the Predators could not lose to the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, it was completely flip-flopped the other way. It's like the old All-Star game in baseball. Back when I was growing up, the National League just dominated the American League every year. Now it's completely flip-flopped, the American League. So it is cycles. I would say that last year, the Andrew Brunette Predators fared much better, even though they lost a couple of games where if you look at the final score, the Oilers won the game, even... The first meeting here last year was lopsided in favor of Edmonton, but the Predators played much, much better. They weren't getting blown away in the guts of the game. In fact, I think the game they lost in Edmonton, they won at Edmonton earlier in the year, which contributed to the Oilers' bad start, which had them change coaches after a disastrous start. They played later in the season when the Predators were really starting to get their game together. They hadn't put it all together yet, but they outplayed the Oilers. They ended up losing. The Oilers made some plays because they've got the best playmakers in the game, Draisaitl and McDavid. There are going to be some games where they just do their thing, as you just noted, often against the Predators.
Yes.
But during the 60 minutes, I thought the Predators had better chances. They outplayed them, but they didn't get the results. There are a lot of games like that. So I think that's what I want to see tonight. We might see something completely different tonight because, as we just kind of laid out there, what did you say? The shooting percentages are both very low. Both of these teams have been getting a ton of shots and a lot of chances, but they haven't gone in, and they've had a lot of problems on the other end of the ice. So does that mean we're going to see an 8-7 tonight or an 8-6, something like that?
They have two of the three worst 5-on-5 shooting percentages in the NHL, 30th and 31st. 4.7 for Edmonton, 4.6 for Nashville.
And what is it overall? Each of them only have one power play goal, so it can't be much better on the power play.
That is true. Well, the Predators are 1-for-11 on the power play.
And Edmonton is 1-for-9.
Okay.
And that is maybe the scariest stat of all because the Edmonton power play is going to shoot up. By the end of the year, they are going to be 25%. They are the best one I have seen since the Predators came into the league in 1998. I have not seen a better power play than Edmonton's power play. They ain't going to sit at 1-for-9, 11%, or whatever that is forever. It's going to happen. So I hope it doesn't happen tonight because it's going to correct itself at some point.
Yeah,
or if it does, Then the Nashville power play, which has done everything but score, they need to kick in with a couple power play goals.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if we saw a high-scoring game here tonight.
As long as the Preds come out on a winning end, it don't matter. Yeah, it could be 13-14. I take it. As long as they win.
14-13, I feel. Yeah. I can only imagine what Barry Trotz would be thinking.
14-13.
Of all people, Barry Trotz watching
that's
a
14-13
game. Yeah, I mean, hey, we shall see. Man. But as we mentioned with Elliot Friedman, the Predators are going to use another second-line combination this evening. The expectation is that Tommy Novak will move back up to second-line center, with Steven Stamkos moving back to the left wing and Luke Evangelista on the right. Novak and Evangelista certainly have chemistry. We were talking about chemistry earlier. Uh-huh. Tommy Novak and Luke Evangelista certainly have chemistry. The expectation, or the hope, I should say, is that that chemistry can perhaps help spark Steven Stamkos, who's still looking for his first goal as a member of the Nashville Predators. But this is now four different starting second-line combinations, one in each game. And I understand what Andrew Burnett is trying to do. I would like to see him exercise a little more patience. And I know they're 0-3, and you don't want to dig yourself an early hole. But even if, let's just say, this formation of the second line doesn't work out tonight, I would like Andrew Burnett to stick with a combination for a few games and see if it works over time. Willie, as you've said, Brunette has admitted maybe he's thinking too much about the line combinations, but I would like to see this line, or if they decide to go back to one of the other second lines they've tried, I would like to see it stick for a few games before making another.
Willie, do you think that the reason that Coach Bruno is doing this and is doing it early is because, listen, the expectation when you go out and get these particular players that are, you know, at one point in their career have been 40 goal scorers, then you still believe they are. They were last season. So what makes you think they're not going to be this season? When that expectation is there and you spend the money and go out and get them, do you sort of – and I'm not saying that he is. Do you believe you feel the pressure of trying to make it work because of the guys that you – went out and paid money to go get? That's why it's like, okay, let me change it now. Let me change it here. Let me try to find the perfect combination. Whereas there's not going to be a perfect combination. You just want to figure out who works well together. And the pressure could be because you spent the money to go get these guys, and now you're trying to make it work.
The expectation level definitely went higher. From what I've heard from Andrew Burnett, I think he is quite a bit more disappointed with the guys that are back from last year than he is with the new guys. I think he expects the new guys, even though they are decorated star players from their past places, right? That you can't be much more decorated than Stamkos and Marchessault. Brady Shea's been on consistent winners his entire career, for first the Rangers and then even more so with Carolina when he became the player that he is that earned that contract. I think he is very confident that all three of those guys are going to come around, but it's going to take more than three games. Elliot was saying 40 games. I'm sure Predator fans cringed when he heard that. When they're like, wait, 40 games? You can't wait 40 games. But, you know, it's going to take a little time. And Andrew Burnett said that. What should not be a problem is the guys that learned the system last year. It took some time to learn that system, right? They were 5-10. Once it kicked in, you started seeing consistent play. Guys were on the same page, and they got great results. And for the first half of the season, they weren't even getting the kind of goaltending that they hoped to get from UC Saros because he had a subpar first half. He started looking like the Vezina Trophy guy in the second half, and it all came together. So right now, I think you're looking around at Lauzon and Carrier, McCarron, Cole Smith, Colton Sissons, Evangelista, Nyquist, O'Reilly, Forsberg. These are the guys that have been there, and they're the ones that need to carry the weight, carry the freight, you know, with the connectivity of the team, more so than the three new guys, who you can understand it's going to take a little time to get it together.
I did Preds Insiders last night with Max Herz, and he brought up something interesting. He was talking about the Predators' early season schedule. It is home heavy. Willie, there will be a point sometime soon where you'll be on the road for like 2.5 weeks, basically. Oh,
yeah, there's a lot of travel in November, December, on into early January. That's the bulk of the road schedule, I'd say, the tough part of the road schedule.
So 5 of their first 6 games are at home. They had the one road game in Detroit. They lost 3-0 over the weekend. But you look at the fact that the schedule is home-heavy, and you look at the caliber of opponents they have been playing in these home games. They played Dallas, which by many accounts is the best team in the Western Conference.
And they're still undefeated.
Right. They're playing Edmonton, which has gotten off to a slow start, but we know how good the Oilers are. You know, the Kraken missed the postseason last year, but as you described, Willie, at the end of the show the other day, a really solid team up and down. No superstars, but a solid team, a team that made the postseason once in its early history.
Yep. And spent a lot of money on a couple of players in the offseason.
Right. So they've got a rematch with the Red Wings on Saturday. Then they host the Bruins next Tuesday, another tough team. It just feels like you've got to bank some of these points at home. As you said, this schedule is going to get in early November. They are basically gone for the month of November. They have very few games, home games, in the month of November. You need to bank these points now, because if you go on the road and you're at a deficit, it's going to be harder to climb out of it.
I hear that, but at the same time, last year it was really on the road that they started to gel in November. And think about every year, Adam, you understand this, having done all the traveling you've done, that with the CMA traditional occupancy of this building, they have the big event. The Predators always go on a very long road trip
yes.
at the beginning of November or very end of October, depending on when the actual show is. So they are used to doing this. I can think of seasons where it all came together. In fact, it was funny. A media member, I don't want to out him, said, I think this team just needs to go on the road and go out together and bond that way. And you will hear that when they go on the road. Hey, we're out on the road. We get to do team dinners. We get to hang out. We bond.
Does that media member's name rhyme with Pal Shill by chance?
You know what? That's a really good guess. It wasn't him, but it easily could have been him. I think if you look, it's a cliche that you hear all the time.
Yes.
And I think if you looked, this is what did Barry Trotz say on Jared's show? He wants to be a more dominant team at home than they were last year. They were 14-15 at one point at home last year. Then when they got hot, they finished 9-1-2 at home, and it looked a lot more like the home ice advantage Smashville that it's supposed to look like. But in the meantime, they were one of the best road teams in the league last year. So it can go either way. I don't know that it's about home and road. I think it's just you need the reps. They've got to just keep ironing out who they are, the mistakes, the leakiness, in particular, the odd man rushes. I cringe thinking about if they have the odd man rush problem
tonight
that they've been having
Ooh.
With the Oilers coming at them.
Ooh,
that is not a recipe for success at all.
No,
I woke up a couple of times last night. Drysdale, odd man rush, 2-on-1. I was like, oh. I was a little sweaty.
Willie waking up in a cold sweat. I had a nightmare that Leon Draisaitl had another 4-goal game against the Predators, which has happened.
Oh,
but no, it look, we talked about the Colorado Avalanche with Elliot Freeman. They're the only other team in the league who have not earned at least 1 point in the standings. They are 0-4-0. The Predators have never started a season 0-4-0. So an opportunity to get back in the win column in a tough matchup against the Edmonton Oilers. Some familiar faces on the ice for the Oilers. Matthias Ekholm, Victor Arvidsson, a new member of the Edmonton Oilers. A top 6 forward for them. I like that signing in the offseason. I thought it could be a really good bargain, but Predators fans certainly will be happy to see them as long as they don't win. We talked about this during the summer. I remember we were talking about Matthias Ekholm potentially winning the Stanley Cup, and there were people who texted in and were like, the thought of him handing the cup to Corey Perry just makes me physically nauseous. So we shall see, but the Oilers and Predators tonight at Bridgestone Arena at 7 o'clock, 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingen here with you. Stillman and Company coming up next at 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie, you were not here for our first segment when we were discussing Will Levis's comments after practice, in which he said, the funny thing about this comment, as Derek pointed out, is that he wasn't asked a question about practice. It just was something he threw in at the end. And it was another example, according to Derek, of him shooting himself in the foot with something he said. We talked about it. You were riled up the other day when Will Levis mentioned after the game, my shoulder may have contributed to the interception I threw at the end of the game. But we want to play this clip for you and get your thoughts. This was Will Levis after practice, apparently a bad practice yesterday.
Well, we talked to Callahan about the urgency. He said, it's always there, but there might be a different tone to it, given the record and these next two tough road opponents. What's your take on the urgency going into a week like this?
Yeah, I think operationally, just in and out of the huddle, too. That's something we saw on this past Sunday that wasn't up to our standard. And with all the stuff that we do, with all the motions and everything, the different types of looks we're going to give to the defense, like, we need to, get up and set on the line of scrimmage with more than 15 seconds to go. We can't be breaking the huddle, approaching the line with 6-7 seconds without even having to or being able to operate what we want to for the play. So it's working through this week of getting the substitutions game-like, making sure that we're getting in and out of the huddle with urgency. I think that mindset in the huddle, in and out of the huddle, should take its course throughout everything else that we're doing in the building and how we approach it. So we didn't have the best day of practice today. We all knew that. We want to come out tomorrow and make sure that urgency and what we put out there on tape is more to our standards, so opportunity to do that tomorrow.
So that was Will Levis. He says everybody knew that. We didn't have a good practice today. Everybody knew that. Well, we didn't know that because we can't watch practice, but thank you for offering it to us. Willie, your thoughts?
Yeah, that I didn't have too much of a problem with him talking about one specific thing. He probably went into more detail than a lot of people would about breaking the huddle, because what he's saying is that's true. Like, I feel like that is what they worked on, and they want to emphasize that. So you're right, D-Mace, I heard what you heard. He offered something up that none of the media knew, and now the media can ride with, well, they didn't have a very good practice. That's just, it's a lack of savvy. It's a lack of, understanding, I think. When you're the quarterback, you don't need, it's media savvy. And I'm not saying really he should know better, because he is a first-year starter from day one. But I think there's an awareness that I could write a number of different examples, and the one that I went off on Monday really bugged me more than this one. But it's in the same sort of category of, it's just a lack of awareness. And when you don't have that awareness, I think we're also putting that alongside of a lack of awareness on the field when we see some decisions he makes, right? And you're putting it all together and you're saying, okay, there's just too much of a file of reasons why he's not cut out to be a good starting quarterback in the NFL. And he's going to get an opportunity that a lot of quarterbacks never get. It looks like he's going to get a long leash to try to work through this, which some don't get. But right now, it's hard for me to see. He's going to have to prove to me that he's going to be a different player than he's been so far. But it's just another example to me of, that's just no, like, I'm sure some people are going, why did you have to tell him? Why did you tell them we had a bad practice? Nobody knew. It's not an open practice.
No.
Why would you say that? We're 1-4. Like, if you're 4-1 and you say we had a bad practice, then everybody's going to say, he's trying to keep him sharp.
Exactly.
Trying to keep him sharp. Okay, trying to keep him focused. I get that. When you're 1-4, you don't offer up that you had bad practice. That's
that's
awareness, ring savvy.
Do y'all hear that? David, do you hear that? Y'all hear that? Oh, that must be Will Levis. Yeah, Callahan's right. Yeah, that's Will Levis backing up the bus on Callahan once again. He did it with the whole arm thing, Willie, when he said
right.
My arm.
Same thing.
Yeah. And then you do it again.
Imagine Brian Callahan's thoughts when he says that. I don't think Brian Callahan said. I don't know. Did he say they had a bad practice?
I
don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't hear him say it.
With the arm thing, that was my thing. Like, Brian, Will, I backed you. I said you made all the throws. Mm-hmm. I was watching you. you didn't tell me you couldn't make the throws, and now you're going to use that? That makes me look bad. That is the awareness that I'm talking about.
Will has no awareness right now. I don't think he will ever gain any awareness. He should know by now. He's 25 years old. He's been a leader of a huge program there at UK. He came from Penn State. He's been in the media as far as having to answer questions and talk about his team. He's not new to this. He is not new to this. If you don't have nothing to say good, then Will Levis, damn it, don't say anything at all. We didn't ask you whether you had a good practice or not. We didn't ask whether the team had a good practice or not. She was asking something totally different, and you offered up that information. Please, Will Levis, please stop talking.
And that will do it for us. We'll stop talking for now. Jared Stillman will start talking at 2 o'clock. That will do it for us. We'll be back at 11 a.m. tomorrow, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Be love, love on your people. Have a wonderful and blessed Thursday. Let's go, Preds. Get your first win. Peace.